Good morning. Today I'll be reading Revelation 2, verses 8 through 11. To the angel of the church in Smyrna write, "These are the words of him who is the first and the last, who died and came to life again. I know your afflictions and your poverty, yet you are rich. I know about the slander of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Do not be afraid of what you are about to suffer. I tell you, the devil will put some of you in prison to test you, and you will suffer persecution for 10 days. Be faithful, even to the point of death, and I will give you life as your victor's crown. Whoever has ears, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. The one who is victorious will not be hurt at all by the second death."
Be seated. It's not the most positive scripture reading, at least in my estimate. But that's the letter that we're on. So we're studying, for those who weren't here last week, we've just begun our series on the seven churches in Revelation and the letters that were written to them, specifically through the vision of John by Jesus. And as we're here, I want to read this again. This is a very short letter. Last week, the content was very challenging to the church, right? Like, it was like, look, you guys are not doing it right. You guys have got to correct some stuff, okay? And the church of Ephesus had a major problem, and Jesus said, I'm not pleased with it, right? They had left their first love. But here, at this church in Smyrna, this letter that's written has a different feel to it. So let's read once again, verse 8, chapter 2. "And to the angel of the church in Smyrna write, the words of the first and the last, who died and came to life." Right, so it's Jesus, and he's reminding them right now of his resurrection, right? I'm the one who died and came to life. And he says, "I know your tribulation and your poverty," which has got to be encouraging to them. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you're going through something hard, and somebody else can sit next to you and say, "I've been there, and I know what you're going through," it gives us some comfort. And Jesus is saying, "My eyes are on you. I know your poverty. Like, I know that you've gone through some serious stuff, and I see it." So that gives them comfort, especially because this is the guy who is powerful enough to conquer death, and he's saying, "I know what you're going through." And it's a reminder that they needed, right? Then you have this weird parenthesis, and my purpose for this lesson is to show, I think there's some power in this parenthesis. Right? What is a parenthesis typically for? A parenthesis is usually something that's an extra tidbit of information. Right? You put a parenthesis in something, it's something that you honestly could skip over the parenthesis and the whole thing will still make sense to you because it's just something extra. But in this letter, the power is in the parenthesis. And so let's read it again. Chapter 2, verse 9, "I know your tribulation and I know your poverty, but you are rich. And the slander of those that say that they are Jews and are not, they're really a synagogue of Satan. Don't fear what you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to throw some of you in prison, and you're going to be tested so that you'll be tested. And for 10 days, you're going to have tribulation. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To the one who is victorious, he will not be hurt by the second death." So this is a really interesting passage. By the way, as I was preparing for this, I'm like looking on information through other commentaries, other writers, other sources to just see what they've said about this passage. And what I found is there's not a lot of good information out there on this letter. And I think it's because it's kind of a well duh letter. You know what I'm saying? It's like you read it and you're like, well, duh. You know, I mean, like, yeah, Jesus conquered and hang in through your suffering and you'll receive the crown of life. And it's just these three short verses and it's simple and it's like, well, duh, I got it. You know, and so people, commentators and people who write on it and maybe study this, I don't know, maybe you've had other sources that were more successful, but the ones that I was looking into, there just wasn't a lot there. And I think it's because the writers will look at it and go, well, everybody who's a Christian knows that Jesus conquered the grave and everybody knows that he's going to take care of them. And I don't know, there's just not a lot of meat there, I guess, in their mind. And as I was studying it, I was wondering, how am I going to approach this? And what I realized is I think Jesus is doing something very particular with reminding them of these things. And yes, it's something we all should know, but there is power in this parenthesis, you're rich. And Jesus is telling them this for a reason. They need to know this information, but here's what this is. They're not learning anything new. They know Jesus conquered the grave, right? Like, they know that already. And they know that they're rich spiritually, and they definitely know that they're suffering. They know all of this, but Jesus is reminding them because they need to be laser focused on this truth as they're in the midst of one of the most difficult, no, the most difficult thing that they're ever going to face. How many of you would say, and you don't have to raise your hand, I'm not asking for that, you're in for a fight. You're in a battle. You're in a struggle. You're in a war, whether it's in your work, your relationships, your family, whatever it is in your life, you would describe the situation and circumstances that you face as difficult and maybe as a battle and a fight and a struggle. We all face this at different times, and they were absolutely facing it here. They were in for a fight. And Jesus wants to remind them of some things to give them faith to be able to handle a situation that they have no control over, right? Like, I've preached sermons to you before on, you know, having faith, stepping out into the unknown, trusting in God, and you'll make it through whatever it is that's before you. But this letter is not Jesus saying, hang in there because you're going to make it through. It's a different message. It's a battle that they have no control over. I'll show you what I mean. Let me start with this. What's the difference between courage and confidence? Is there any? And I thought about that for a while. And I think there is. They're related. And I think we use one word to represent both of those words in a religious atmosphere. We use the word faith, right? And faith is having courage, it's having confidence, it's both of those things. So they're both very similar. But courage to me is when the outcome is unknown, right? Like, I don't have knowledge of what's about to happen and what's about to take place. The outcome is completely unknown. I'm stepping into an unknown situation, and so I must have courage, right? It's the military sergeant who's like looking around. He pulls up his binoculars. He's out on a battlefield, and he sees shadows all along the horizon, and he realizes that that's his enemy, and there's way more of them than what he thought. And then one of his soldiers taps him on the shoulder and says, look out here. And he looks to the east, to the west, and to the south, and he realizes we're completely and totally surrounded by the enemy. And that sergeant pulls his troops together and says, all right, men, we're completely surrounded. Don't let a single one of them escape. That's courage, right? I don't know this outcome. It looks terrifying. Odds are against me, but I'm going to step out in courage into a situation where the outcome is unknown. You know, scriptures that talk about we walk by faith and not by sight, stepping out of the boat, stepping out of your comfort zone. You know, I've preached sermons like that. When you step out of your comfort zone, you're stepping into the comfort zone of God. You know, and I love that kind of stuff. Have courage. But Jesus, I don't think, is telling them to have courage. I think he's trying to boost their confidence. And let me show you what I mean by this. Confidence is also another step of faith. Usually, courage is the first step of faith. We have many biblical examples of courage, right? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego is one of my favorites. It's those three guys who were faithful to the Lord. And the king, Nebuchadnezzar, tosses them into the furnace. And their prayer in the midst of it is, we're going to trust God and we're going to have courage that he will deliver us from this. But they didn't know the outcome. But they were willing to go through it because they had faith, because they were courageous. But confidence is the next step in faith, I think. Because confidence is based on knowledge. Courage is in the unknown. confidence is I know the outcome. I have enough information, right? And I'm assured of a certain outcome. Confidence is seen in the construction crew. You know, they're laying a drain for a new building project that's going on. And while they're excavating, the workmen uncover this power cable that's running through. And they don't know whether it's live or dead. And so they stop, and the foreman calls the electrician and says, "Hey, come out here. We need you to take a look at this wire we've uncovered. Is it safe?" And so the electrician comes out, and he looks down at the wire, and he sees the exposed wire, and he says, "You're fine. This wire is dead. It's not hot," right? And so the foreman of the project looks over at him and says, "Are you sure?" You know? And the electrician says, "Yes, no, you're good." And so the foreman says, "Well, will you cut it for us then?" Right? And the guy gets a little sly smile on his face. He says, "Well, I'm not that sure." You know what I'm saying? Like, he didn't have enough confidence. So what's the next step in that procedure? I've got to get some more confidence about that. I've got to get some knowledge here. I've got to run some more tests. I've got to make sure. I've got to do whatever it is to get more information to know the outcome that's going to take place before. And when you have enough information, you can confidently step up and cut something that others might not have that same. How could you cut that? What if it was on? No, I'm confident because I've been here. I've done this. I've run the tests. I've seen this before. Now, in our text, Jesus is telling them you have to have confidence in two different things. There's two things that you have to be confident in this text. And the first is this: you're in a battle, and you're about to suffer. And do you see this in the text? Like, these people at this church, like, the message from Jesus is, you guys are about to suffer. And his encouragement to them is to be faithful unto, what does the text say? Death. The struggle that these people were facing, they're not going to make it through. He said, you're going to be thrown into prison, and you're about to go through the most suffering you've ever been through. And you need to be faithful unto death. Because that's what's coming your way. And there's confidence. But man, that's not something I would want to be confident in. We're really good at handling the junk and the just awful situations in our life on a few different levels. One is when we still have hope that the situation can get better. Right? When there's, we talked about it, those who were in my class, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and I can do something to control my situation. We feel better about that. We're good as a church at helping other people who are going through a situation where we can see the light at the end of the tunnel, but what do we do when there's no light at the end of the tunnel? What happens when you're diagnosed with a disease in which there's no cure? What happens when a loved one in your life has dementia or cancer and you're not seeing a lot of hope there? What happens when things happen in your life and you feel like it's not going to get better? You've prayed to God, "God, I want you to help my relationship. I want you to help my brokenness, my hurt. My marriage is on the rocks. My friends are leaving me, whatever it is. This is the situation I'm in, and I can't do anything to change it. God, please help." And you realize God says, "I'm there with you," but his answer to your prayer is not to deliver you from that storm, but to walk with you through that storm, and there's no way around it. And Jesus is telling them this same message. You're about to face tribulation, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. Now, the question is, what do we do? See, it's real quiet in here, because you've heard me preach on having courage and stepping out into the unknown. But Jesus is looking at these people and saying, you're going to have some confidence to step into the known, and the known is not pretty. And the known is not good. And it hurts. And it's dark. See, he's giving them confidence. Now he says, I see it. I see your tribulation. I see the storm. I see you hurting. Because sometimes we want to cry out and say, God, are you even there? Do you care about me? Because if you loved me, you wouldn't let me go through something like this. If you loved me, my husband would come back. If you loved me, you would heal me. If you loved me, you wouldn't have let that person in my life die. We're not good at handling this because we love messages on hope. But Jesus doesn't give them confidence that their situation on earth will change. And that's why he reminds them of things that they already know. He's not interested in presenting new information because they've stepped into a new situation. And when you step into a new situation and you realize this is now what I'm dealing with, I've got to learn how to live in the rain of this storm because this storm is not going away. Now God's standing with you, and he's there to remind you of things you might have known in your head before, but now you've got to live them out in your heart and believe them, and it's really hard because there's no light at the end of the physical tunnel. Here on earth, it might not get better. Here on earth, you might have to deal with this pain. You might have to endure this storm. You might have to go through this situation. And maybe there isn't anything you can do to change your circumstance. And some of you right now are going, wait, Nathan, are you saying there's no hope that I shouldn't pray to God to help? No, you absolutely should. You've heard me preach. You know me better than that. And I believe in God and his miraculous working power, but I also believe that God wants us to have confidence in him to be able to handle the storms of life that might not blow away real fast. And he says to them, you have to remember what you already know. You know it so well, it's in parentheses. You are rich. He reminded them at the beginning. He says, I'm the one who died and is now alive again. I have conquered the grave and I have overcome the tribulation of this world. And death no longer has power over you. You're about to suffer. This storm is really hard, but you are rich in another way. And he reminds them that though you might not live and you will die, all of us will at some point in this life. He acknowledges that here. Jesus isn't some kind of pie in the sky Christianity that he's offering here. You get what I'm saying? It's not just this feel-good stuff. He's genuine with you. And he says, yeah, sometimes we'll save you from the storm, but sometimes you're going to have to go through it. And his message to Smyrna is to remember and focus on the fact that this first death has no power over you. And so be confident as you face a storm you cannot control, because you are rich. That parenthesis is powerful, isn't it? And so he's reminding them of who they are and what they already have. I told this story before, but it speaks so loudly to me in moments like this. And so I guess I'm just reminding you of what you already know. But it's the story of the dad who's riding around in the countryside, and his son's in the passenger seat with him, and they're cruising along. The windows are down in the car, and all of a sudden a bee flies into the car. And that's typically no big deal, but the boy starts to freak out and gets hysterical and is screaming and is kicking and is flailing because he's deathly allergic to bees. And he's had a bee sting before and he's almost lost his life from it. And so it's this trauma coming back in this moment as this bee is flying around in this car. And his dad, driving the car, reaches out and snatches hold of the bee. And he holds the bee in his hand for a few seconds and then he lets it go. And the bee starts to fly around, and the kid, he was calm for a moment, thinking his dad was going to dispose of this thing. He's going to take it out. He's going to chunk it out the window. And instead, now this bee's flying around again, and the boy starts to freak out. But the dad opens up his hand and says, son, calm down. You don't have to worry. Do you see this stinger in my hand? You don't have to be scared of that bee anymore. He can't do anything to you because I've already taken the sting for you. And Jesus is telling and reminding this church to be confident in the fact that this suffering and this storm that they're facing cannot hurt them any longer. And it's not because it won't be painful, and it's not that you won't have to endure it, but you can have confidence through it because I've taken the sting for you. Where, O death, is your sting? Where, O hell, is your victory? Death has no power over us because Jesus took the sting, folks. And when we hold on to that and we focus on that, look, I don't know what you're going through this morning. And for some of you, we're bringing up some really tough stuff because you're reminded of situations and brokenness and hurt in your life that you have no control over. And sometimes we just want to go out there and we want to fix it ourselves. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll get in the car and drive wherever I have to make this thing better. But sometimes getting in a car and driving somewhere doesn't fix it. Sometimes spending more money or finding the best doctors won't do it. And Jesus tells them, there's a couple of things you can have confidence in. Number one is this storm is here and this is going to happen. But you can also be confident that because I've taken this thing for you, this first death has no power over you. This persecution has no power over you. This storm that you're facing has no power over you because Jesus has already made that sacrifice for you. And that's some real hope that we can hold on to. And so if you're here this morning and you're hearing this message and you're realizing you're in a storm and you're hurting, and you're broken, and maybe it's a storm that you have no control over, my encouragement to you is to do the same thing that Jesus wanted this church to do. Laser focus on what you do know. Jesus has conquered death, and you are rich. Now, if you've never believed in Jesus and been baptized into him, and you've never gained that victory, it's offered to you. No matter who you are or what you've done or how far you think you are away from who God wants you to be, he offers you the free gift of victory over the storms in your life. That's why we call it good news, right? Because it's good news that no matter who I am or what I've done, regardless of my past, Jesus offers me a future in which he's already taken the sting of death for me. And sin and death no longer have power over us. And when we fight our battles and face our storms from that perspective, we will have confidence and be able to have a faith on a whole nother level. And I believe that with my whole heart. And so wherever you are, whatever you need, my prayer is that you'll respond right now as together we stand and sing.